for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Kipper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with over 50 years of playing PlayStation and like 14 years in this games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popculturist. We can watch us record this show live. We can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you're listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watching us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. Max, how you doing? How are things?
Yeah, I'm alright.
Much to report on this week? Apart from your access card saga at work continues?
Oh, mate, yeah. Everything's fine. I passed my security clearance check. Now I'm just awaiting my new pass, which, according to the security team, should have arrived by now, and they're very upset that I'm not using it, and they have to keep updating my old card, but you know, whatever.
Is it being sent to you at your house or at your
No. So it'll be sent at work. So last night when I spoke to them, they're like, "Well, you should already have it." I'm like, "Well, I don't." He's like, "Okay, 24-hour access then." I'm like, "Yeah, that's not going to work because it's a public holiday today. No one's going to be in." 48 hours then. I'm like, "Okay, we'll see how we go. You may be hearing from me again."
Spoilers, they will likely be hearing from you, I imagine.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I myself have had a pretty good week. No issues around, you know, access passes, whatever. What are you up to this week?
Nothing. I've all been fucking sick still.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the same.
I'm still dealing with this cough that I've had for like what feels like forever.
Mm. Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. Like, so I'm 2 weeks into the new job, which I'm thoroughly enjoying, but I'm talking a lot more than I normally, you know, than I had been for a longer time because I've been, you know, working from home. So it has blown apart my voice a little bit. It's a little bit rusty. I did work some wrestling this weekend. I worked at Renegades on Sunday because it's a long weekend here in Victoria this week, which has been fantastic. But I did something a little bit different this week, Max, and you jumped online to yell at me and be like, "I don't know what the fuck you're doing." We returned to the streaming game. Well, I did this week at least with WWE 2K25. So let's get into the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you, not that's the wrong section. We're talking about what we've been playing, games we've been playing. Oh, man, I'm so tired. So I made the horrible decision last night. Went to the wrestling show. It was an evening show. Got home around midnight, 12:30. Good friend of the show, Will Walker.
We don't record on Sundays anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad we don't, because it was a late show because the long weekend. Normally, I'd be home by like 8, right? But yeah, so like Will Walker, man of mine, wrestler. So we both worked the show yesterday, and we're like, "Oh, we want to play fucking." We talked to a whole bunch of WWE 2K25 on the drive there, and then on the way back, we did, so we stopped. And, last night we ended up playing till about 3:30 in the morning, which I know for you, Max, is a pretty common way to spend your evenings.
I finished work at 3:30 in the morning. I wish I could play games till 3:30.
I mean, like, the being up in that time.
Oh, right? Okay.
So, yeah, sure. I'm not used to that, and I probably shouldn't have done it, but, I had a couple hours sleep this morning. And then I had a good nap this evening, which I went from like 4 to, I don't know, 6:30 or something. And I did wake up like, you know, when that wake up, I'm like, "Fuck, I have to do shit in like an hour. I'm going to pull this, this cognition out of my asshole." But As I'm saying, so yeah, so a lot of 2K25 this week. So that's why I'm a little fucking weird today, just because I'm very tired. But yes, so a couple times this week I sat here at this table, which I haven't done in a very long time, and we streamed. We played some games online. In this case, it was WWE 2K25, which is, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Now, Max, when you jumped into the stream, what did you see? Because your first comment was, "What the fuck are you doing?" But like, I want to know before I go into the details of what I was playing, what's experience. How was it for you to go in and look?
I think you were just opening card packs. I'm like, well, that's a bold strategy.
Yeah. And then you came through when I was playing the GM mode?
Were you? I don't know. A lot of shit was just appearing on screen. And then you were like, I was like, match over, this person won, match over, this person won. I'm like, well, that seems fucking boring as. I'm like, if you're going to play the game. Don't sim it. That seems a bit.
No, all right. So that's what I wanted. I wanted to see what it looked like for you on the other side. So before I jump into my initial impressions, big thank you to the team over at 2K Australia and Double Jump Communications for providing us the review code for WWE 2K25. So they provided us with the Bloodline edition, which allowed us to get a week early access. So we got the code on Friday morning, and then it was pretty much clear my weekend because this is what I'm going to be doing. It hasn't been a smooth launch window, as it wasn't until a patch today, at time of recording, which is the 10th of March, where My Rise, which is the campaign of the game, the single-player campaign, was literally inoperable. You could not open it. It would not work. You'd click it, and it would just hard crash to the game. So not really sure as to why or what or how. But it was a pretty substantial impact to the game in its early release window, but it is working now. So as I mentioned on the stream, I did mess about in the My Faction mode, which is the cards that Max was mentioning. Excuse me. So play a little bit of the weekly towers in there. I've completed all of them, so they're like weekly tasks where each week you get 5 matches and you get a reward. Jumped in there, did that, got a couple of card packs, got some extra points. It's still early days in My Faction, just because I've not spent a stack amount of time with it. Plus, it is a mode that does get better over time as more challenges come ahead, including the live events, which will give you your time challenges to get additional cards, additional rewards. I have started in the character creation. We have made Phoebe, my partner. We've made the beginnings of her. We've not done anything outside of appearance. Where myself, we have began what would be the new 2025 version of Ryan Betson, the 2K25 simulated wrestler. A big hunk of what Walker and I did last night was spend a lot of time just building up the moveset, and then I was able to build on the character from there. So this will still mean nothing to you, Max, but for those playing at home that care about wrestling, I'm a big fan of moves that do, I guess, head damage, right? So good DDTs, poison runners, brain busters, things like that. So we built the entire moveset around moves like that. So a lot of my big signatures, my big finishes, are just dropping someone on their head and various ways to do so. So then we built backwards, as in then we nailed the finishes, then we went into the signatures, and we made sure those signatures fed into the finishes so that, you know, if you do this maneuver in this corner, you'll get this result, but then allows you to move into that finisher. So you're not constantly having to like reposition within the ring to get a good flow. And then from the signatures, we went into sort of the heavier grapples and the light attacks, heavy attacks, and we kind of rebuilt the entire character to line up with that flow that goes from, you know, your standard strike to your finisher. So we wanted something kind of bullshit in that it's all head damage, but also that follows wrestler sense in that this move or this strike works into this. So just by playing the game or having the character sim itself, it will flow into one another and have a cohesiveness that would only be present in, you know, or we'd try to replicate the real life thought process of planning your move set within a match. That just makes more of a fun visual simulated experience, mostly, was kind of what I was going for with that. So I haven't really touched on the aesthetics in my character outside of the basics. Phoebe, however, did spend a good bit of time this afternoon building my face on my character. And then she handed me the controller and I wasn't paying attention. And I went back and wiped all of her hard work. So that was fun. And I had just done that. I wiped myself when I was doing all my, you know, attire and making those choices. Turns out I wiped that too. So that's rad. So I'm not too stoked about that. It was a good bit of work. Did a great job. And I fucked it.
You absolute fucking muppet.
Oh, I know. The second I did, it was one of those like, oh, you fucking idiot.
Although, to be fair, Phoebe should know better and should have saved it before she gave you the controller.
That's true. It is equally on both of us, but mostly me. And then the mode that you mentioned, being like, this is fucking boring, what are you doing? So that is the My GM mode. One of the first things we jumped into, Craig and myself, when we streamed the game the other day, and is, look, the reason I'm wearing my headset mic, these are the mics that I use for my wrestling commentary, is because I forgot that I was left set up this way. So when I came down here to record the show, I was like, oh, I cannot be bothered moving all these things. I'm just going to go with what was already attached. So the My GM mode, the best way to explain it for those that are sort of new to it, it is essentially fantasy football but with wrestling, in that you have your own promotion, which in this case was a wrestling company or a brand, wrestling brand within WWE, and then you pick a bunch of wrestlers from a draft, and then you build matches and storylines leading into pay-per-views, with the idea is that, you know, they get better, they get stronger, then you have to balance out their each individual wrestler's characteristics, so that what their preferred match type is, what their stamina, what their morale, what their morale, stamina and injury status. So like what their kind of health is, right? The other thing, and the popularity is the other one I wanted. So if you have a champion, the champion is more popular, then you put them in a bunch of matches, they get wins, they move up the card, and they become more popular and they get better results. So a couple of minor changes this year compared to previous GMs. There has been the inclusion of a new brand in NXT Mutiny. I have no context for NXT Mutiny because it's not a real brand. It is a made-up new version of NXT from the My Rise mode. But as the My Rise mode had been inaccessible to me until this afternoon, I've not been able to go in or have any context as to what it means. But there's been the inclusion of new GMs as well. So you get Ava, which is The Rock's daughter. She's the GM for NXT. We also got Mr. Fuji, CM Punk, Ted DiBiase got cut, which is the one I used last year, I should say. So there's some couple of changes in how my GM runs, in that previously everyone would be working towards their pay-per-view, which is, you know, every 5 weeks you have a pay-per-view. However, here they've switched the game up so that you have everyone should be building up to what is called their go-home show, which is the show before the pay-per-view. That's where the one where you want to kind of resolve all your rivalries, get it all nice and tidy, and then now, as of this year, you have a shared pay-per-view. So previously, you would have to build your own Elimination Chamber. Now, I know you watched Elimination Chamber recently, Max, so I'm just using that as an example. So previously, I would have to book my entire card. I'd be like, all right, this is the main, these are the middle card, and this is the main event matches, right? Done. That's how I'd have to build it. Now, that focuses on the go-home show, the show that leads into pay-per-view. The pay-per-view is shared. So there's an opener, there's a mid-card, and then there is a main. And the game will kind of pick the stipulations and what it needs, but you then have to submit a wrestler. So in the opening match, let's say it was a triple threat, or there's three brands, So you'd be a triple threat. Each of you have to submit a wrestler, and then they've got to, you know, you don't know who the other person's picked. Hopefully you win, etc. Mid-card, you submit a match. So if you have a match that you didn't resolve in your go-home show, you can resolve it here. So you'll get that additional bump, and the main event would be similar to the opener. So in turn, there are new ways of tackling the pay-per-views, and you get additional and new results for it. So unique power cards, and the power cards are little buffs or debuffs that allow you to either fuck over the other brands that you're versing, or that can benefit yourself in terms of helping fix injuries, helping rebuild stamina, rebuild popularity, morale, or also, you know, certain cards will boost particular match types. So if you're having, if you've got someone that's really good at Hell in a Cell matches, and there's a card that boosts Hell in a Cell matches, awesome. You're going to get a really good result for that show, for that match on that show. They've included a couple new match types in the Gauntlet Elimination match. So a Gauntlet is, you know, two people start, eliminated, another person comes in, and you just go until, you know, there's one winner left. So that's pretty cool. They've also included the underground match type, which is the ring, no ropes, with a lump, like it's a lumberjack match. There's individuals around the ring, the ropes taken from the ring, and it's kind of attempted to be like more of a quote unquote shoot fight setup, as in you can't do your sprint, you can't do your fancy rope moves, or it's just all about big punching, big bussing, going to that victory. But the changes in my GM that I've experienced so far are really good, are quite enjoyable. I'm continuing to use the classic mode from 2023 in terms of how the match types work. I found that more in, like, the beginnings of it in 2024 where you had to unlock it all seemed really fun, but it was quite obnoxious, and especially when you want to kind of have more of a fun play, where this time I've gone that way. They've increased the online. They've increased the monies which you can spend. They've now added online, which allows you to play online for the first time in ever. there's now timers, so you can time. You know, right? You know, you around. You're like, hey, you've got 8 minutes. If you go over 8 minutes, you get a penalty, etc., etc. The only other thing that I haven't touched upon is the island, which is one of the big selling points. This was something that was highlighted in the state of play from a couple weeks ago, Max. I know it's probably the moment that you went and skipped it, but
this is the one where I'm like, oh, it's the my NBA city.
But correct. Yes, that's the one.
But for nonsense.
Yeah, and shittier. So like the island, the island is really not it's very much a great idea, but the execution feels a little rough. So the idea is, yeah, it's kind of like a theme park in that there's a central area, and, you know, in various districts, there's a lot of themed shops and places you can experience within WWE. So even then, there's a lot of cosmetics that are locked within the island, like the Nike shoes or particular merch or particular haircuts, and they use virtual currency, which is the same virtual currency you use in My Faction. So suddenly people are going to have to think about how they balance their virtual currency. Like, are you probably going to spend it all in My Faction, or do you want to put it into the island? Now, there are a lot of ways to earn virtual currency in the island, but they're not, it's not like the flowing rivers of VC, because they don't want that. 2K want you to spend money. So yeah, what I've experienced of the island is a little mediocre, a little underwhelming. It could be substantially better, but this is week one, or week zero, I guess, because, you know, full normal launch, quote unquote, isn't for a little while, not another week, or this Friday, I believe. So there's that. Yeah, look, the soundtrack as well is brilliant. Normally there's always songs that shit me to tears, but every track on this is really, really fun, really good. There's a great Gojira song on there, which I'd never heard before. There's a good Jelly Roll song, which is an artist I never thought I'd give a shit about, and I still don't, but, like, they've used him a lot at recent WWE shows, and I don't mind it. It's not horrible. But, yeah, obviously more to come as I spend more time with the title. Really enjoying it personally, as I've been talking about it for about 15 minutes flat. So it's time, I think it's your time to talk, Max. There has. Do you have any questions about WWE 2K? I'm assuming the answer is fucking no. But
No, I'm stoked that you're enjoying it. But you mentioned that you were enjoying the majority of the changes that came into GM mode.
Yes.
What is it about them that makes them better than the previous version?
The way I like it's a couple of reasons why I like the change in the my GM. So changing it to the go home show is interesting. It actually completely forces me to rechange my strategy. So the idea is it's four shows and the fifth show is your pay per view. So with rivalries going up to level four from 0 to 4, you know, you normally spend a lot of your time building those stories up until said pay per view. Now that the pay per view is shared, which makes a whole lot of sense in the same way that in regular WWE TV, there is Raw, there is SmackDown, but when it comes to a pay per view, the matches are shared between both brands. It's not here is a Raw pay per view, here is a SmackDown pay per view. So it does bring in a little bit of influence from the real world. But additionally, it forces you to, as the players, whether it be if you're playing with all humans or yourself and some CPUs, it forces you to come together, and rather than competing one another like alongside each other in this like, you know, vertical race, you're now having to like merge and directly compete with one another. So like that little change is fun. And with the additional match types, it's allowed a rebalancing of the finances of each of the modes, or each of the match types, I should say. So an example, like a Backstage Brawl was $90,000 last year. It's now $60,000 because they've introduced the Underground, which in and of itself has like quite a substantial cost. So there's a couple little small changes like that. The new GMs are cool. We normally play with our own custom superstars, but having a look at some of the new ones, there's one of the new ones out of Ava, I believe. You know, it's like it's an injury. So like, you know, there's a card that you can wipe injuries or, you know, reduce injury time, which is really helpful, because if you blow out all your characters to the point they're all fucking dead and they're all injured, you can't do nothing. So be able to like wipe them, bring them back, etc. is very, very helpful. Big Shep in the chat, I'm saying, goes, I popped hard for Armando Estrada as a GM. No, I didn't know that dude. I've seen his face before, but I've never seen him in wrestling. I think it was just certainly before my time. But as most of looking at individual specs of each of the characters. But so yeah, look, it's already something that, you know, I know I'm going to spend a lot of time with, mostly because of our weekly my GM time that I have with both my partner as well as my friends. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far, but I was very aware that I would. I still haven't touched the showcase mode or universe mode or my rise, just because of time, having to go work actual professional wrestling this weekend. It did take away the time to play pretend fighting. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. We'll have more to say. And what I'm thinking of doing is switching things up, and when we do a full review under more of the players, I might bring Will in and sort of see what it looks like for him as an active professional wrestler. So when he looks at the game and, you know, looks at creating the custom character, because he uses it a lot to help him build his actual in-ring gear. So then he'll capture a video, send it to there's a couple of people that make wrestling gear, and go, hey, this is what I want, and they'll build it from the video for 2K, which is fun. Pardon me. And it also allows him to sort of, you know, plan out his matches, plan out his move sets, so we can sort of, you know, replicate that put that into a real world application from the move sets. He's like, hey, you know, oh, I like this move set, and I can do it. And he tries it in the real world and goes, hey, that didn't work. It didn't quite flow well. So let's switch it up in 2K and then sort of replicate it in there. It's really, really cool. And then I might bring someone like Josh Robinson in, who I reviewed 2K24 with last year. Because for him, a lot of it is in that simulation space. And, you know, character creation and the My Rise. So they would be able to offer another angle again. So we may have like a triple threat review of WWE 2K25 for a bit of funsies. But that's not about me talking. I've been talking nonstop about fucking WWE 2K25, and it's been a blast. But there was another game that we received this week, Max. And I played a little bit of it, and you've played some of it also, and that is Split Fiction.
Yeah, so Split Fiction is the latest game coming out of Hazelight Studios, published by EA. You follow it follows the authors Mio Hudson and Zoe Foster, I believe are the character names. And in the same premise as It Takes Two, you have to play this game cooperatively and in permanent split screen. So in Split Fiction, the story is essentially they're trying to get a publishing deal. One of them clues on pretty quickly that something seems fishy. When they're like, hey, come into our super sexy bubbles that will generate your ideas and put you in a virtual reality space of your creations. And one of them's like, that seems a bit off. And the other one's like, nah, this is cool. And they somehow wind up in each other's bubbles, causing their fictions to split.
And merge.
Yeah, it's great. One of them's a sci-fi writer, one of them's a fantasy writer. So you are back and forth between a fantasy and a sci-fi setting, which is cool. And it's very similar to what It Takes Two does. You're working together with your partner. You can see what they're doing. They can see what you're doing. You work through the puzzles. You work through the levels. I've only played the first level. Unfortunately, Ali, my wife, who I'm playing with, we have sick kids at the moment, and we just did not have time to play at all. So we received the code Thursday, I believe. Thank you to the team. And I didn't get to play it until yesterday. but yeah, it's such a charming, fantastic style of game. I actually think I'm so far in my limited time enjoying it more than what I enjoyed It Takes Two. I'm lucky. It seems a little bit more fast paced. It does seem a little bit more difficult than the previous game as well.
I'd agree with that.
They have definitely turned up the puzzles. They're kind of assuming that you've done this before. So they've kind of turned everything up a little bit just to give you that extra, extra difficulty bump. But other than that, having only played the first level, unfortunately, I can't talk about it too much. But what I do have to do is correct a statement that I made last week. I was complaining about Monster Hunter Wilds and removing the ranged attack for the insect glaive. Turns out it's just hidden behind an extra input.
Oh.
Which I found. So apologies to having a bitch about not being able to do that. You totally can.
Well, that was a big sticking point for you with the Monster Hunter Wilds.
I was so mad because I couldn't do it. And it turns out that instead of just holding down L2, which is your like aim in first person mode kind of thing, and hitting the button, it's got to hold down L2, you got to hold down R2, and then you got to push other buttons to do it. I'm like, well, that's... It's just extra steps.
It's a lot of dexterity.
Now that I've worked it out, it's fine. So, like, apologies for having a whinge that they've removed it with the hand. I'm just an idiot. The game's still great. It's still running suboptimally, unfortunately. So I haven't played too much more. I've done a few hunts here and there. But playing on performance mode with a capped 30 frames seems rough.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit rough on the Monster Hunter side, but look, similar to yourself, I have spent some time with Split Fiction, probably about an hour and a half, maybe. So, similar challenge to yourself. I was playing it with my partner Phoebe, and it was one of those things where, because it is required of us to play together, it's finding that right time. There are some of the things you mentioned, like the difficulty increase. I would agree with you. It does feel a little harder than It Takes Two, as a more recent example.
I don't think it's difficulty in its like puzzle situation. It's just faster.
Yeah, it's faster, and the platforming is more difficult.
Your reaction time needs to be a little bit better.
Yes. So, like, it was one of those things where I was playing it, and to me, of course, it's no issue, because I've played games for 20-something years, you know, majority of my life. But, like, there was a lot of little innate gaming systems that to me are like, oh, cool, standard. But Phoebe having to experience them for the first time. An example is there was like a platforming section where it became side like a side 2D, and the, you know, the poles hanging from the up from the bottom and the top, and you've got to like jump across and up and whatever. And to me, I was like, that's super natural. But like, oh, cool, it's wanting me to go that way. Just hold left, jump from pole to pole. Yep, time it, easy, done. Where Phoebe, having not experienced something like that before, goes, oh, what the fuck am I doing? Where do I go? How do I get on this ladder? How do I jump on there? So it's just, there's a couple of little things that are taken for granted if you're not a frequent game player. But unlike It Takes Two, where I found the story to be a lot more engaging immediately, I don't have that here.
So the stakes were higher, I feel.
Actually, no, yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah.
But my parents are playing this as well at the moment. Yeah. They're about three bosses deep, and the biggest complaint I'm hearing from them is, swinging from any swinging object to landing on a ladder is real rough.
Mm.
Apparently, they're having real sticking issues. I'm like, I haven't experienced that because I'm just not hitting the ladders. I'm just dashing straight to the platforms themselves.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that you could dash in midair because they completely skipped that section that says, "Hey, if you just push square in midair, there's a midair dash."
Yeah.
And now that they've realized that, their problem's gone.
Yeah, Phoebe's gets a little bit of that as well, but it's more of like a little panic as like she's realizing she may not make the jump, and so she's like, ah, like dashing and jumping. I'm like, no, like, it's something as simple as just hold the, you know, jump and get to, like, and when you get to the top of that peak of the jump, then you can dash, then you can jump again. Or jump and then double jump at the top of that peak, right? Like, smacking it twice just gets you, like, slightly higher. But that's, once again, that's something that you learn from just playing games for a very, very long time. But, yeah, I would agree with you. I think the stakes not being as high immediately, which, because it takes two, the idea is that as a young girl, she has two dolls that are then possessed by her parents, who are going through a rough time, like a divorce, essentially, and they're reconciling their differences and sort of healing as you play along these two characters and together. Now, of course, there is some combativeness between those characters in It Takes Two because of the setting of, you know, parents that are struggling. Where here, because there's no preformed relationship between the two main characters, it's just antagonistic, and they both just come off like pricks. So, like, I assume as we go further, we'll start to see more about them and find, like, those little moments of vulnerability or those positive parts about their character that connects the two to makes it not... Because right now, it feels like it's two characters playing alongside one another, and you go to their world, and then you go to their world, and then you go back to their world, and you go to their world again. And, like, that's still fun, and I'm enjoying it. But, like, the story of itself, the narrative, is not pulling me forward. You know, like... and I know that... Excuse me one sec. Like, I know that for Haze Light have the ability to tell good story and they have good character, but for whatever reason, it's not grabbing me in that part. The characters are interesting enough that I want to see what is next and, like, hoping to get that story beat. And when we're looking at the review scores of Split Fiction, we're looking at 9s and 10s and, you know, it's pretty massive stuff. People are loving the game, so I assume I'm a little wrong at the moment, and it'll come in time. But that's not an issue that you're seeing, or like,
not at the moment. I mean, like I said, I'm only an hour in. I've only played the first level.
But like, even from then, so you, I guess, because mine's only like an hour and a half, right? Hour, 2 hours, not even. So, but my impression and your impression would be relatively similar from a story perspective, like. Are you just giving a bit more benefit of the doubt than I am?
Possibly. I mean, like I said, there's one cynical person, one optimistic person. The cynical person's like, hey, there is something seriously wrong.
Mm.
Like, we need to figure this out. They haven't gelled instantly, but I would imagine that it gets there. You can't have... I mean, like you mentioned with It Takes Two, it was... by design that way, whereas now we're going to we had two characters that knew each other that were set up, and their whole thing of their, like, us experiencing their growth over their time together is different to here, because they're fresh people. So we're going to get that. They have to not only learn to work together to begin with, but they've also got those separate ideologies on what they...
Yeah, and like goals and motivations, that sort of stuff, yeah.
So they haven't... Yeah, there's no pre-existing glue.
Yeah. Like, aside from them both being writers, and that's cool. And I like that this game is, a good analogy for, like, creation and gaming, particularly. Like, you know, they talk about the idea of... it feels like an allegory for AI. You know, the idea of farming all creative content to kind of make nothing. I'm certainly really enjoying it. From a gameplay perspective, I can see a lot of frustrations coming through my partner, but like I'm very reassuring in that, hey, it's fine. Like I'm not impatient. If it needs to take you a couple more goes to do this platforming section, okay, cool.
Well, I'm
very aware that your skill set is different to mine.
I've noticed that it drags the other person through now.
Yes.
Like, if they fail a section, it's like, hey, your partner hit the checkpoint. We're not going to set you back and make them wait.
Yeah, and, like, once again, not having any lives, or the only issue of the game is if you both die, then you might reset the checkpoint. But it's very forgiving, which is helpful in a purely multiplayer experience. If you were to have, like, six lives and you fucked it up and you're like, nah, that would probably blow out the game pretty hard, but... But yeah, big thank you to the team over at EA Australia for providing us the review code for Split Fiction. We will have more to say in the coming weeks. And Mute in the chat says, it's not as hard as Cuphead, am I right? Yeah, fuck Cuphead, man. I love Cuphead, but I also hate Cuphead because that shit is hard. But my son's really good at it, which is super weird. But let's get to the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation.
That's a fairly light news week this week. So let's kick off with a reboot, or an reboot. PS Productions will work on its first non-Sony intellectual property, as it's been pulled in to produce a Resident Evil reboot by Barbarian director Zach Cregger. The film, set to release in theaters on 18th of September 2026, has been shopped around, with Warner Brothers allegedly interested in distributing it, but having released all of the previous Resident Evil movies, Sony is clinging to the rights and hoping for a hit here. Cregger has co-written the screenplay with Shea Hatton, and while details remain under wraps, it's said that this movie will go back to the roots of the Capcom franchise. Quote, I've been a rabid fan of these games for decades, and to be able to bring this amazing title to life is a true honor. Says Cregger. Sony Pictures' Sanford Panich added, quote, Zach is one of the most talented, exciting new directors to come on the scene in many years. His brilliant approach in restarting and refreshing the legendary Sony franchise instantly makes this one of our most important releases in 2026. And writing on Twitter or X, PlayStation Productions' Asad Quizzlebash said, quote, excited for PS Productions to help produce such a beloved and iconic franchise. Do we need more Resident Evil movies? Because they progressively got shitter.
They really did. Like I love them because they're shit. I've not seen them all.
They got more and more shit.
They did. Like, if you look at the Metacritic of Resident Evil, it's a solid, solid linear downhill progression. Like, it's rough. It's fucked. And then they're like, well, let's reboot it with Resident Evil Welcome to the Neighborhood, or whatever the fuck it was. And that looked real. That was an interesting movie. From a set design, from a replication of the Resident Evil, like, especially Resident Evil 2, it was awesome. Everything else about it was fucking shit. So, do I want them to reboot it? Possibly. Like, I'm not against it, because it's clearly been a big thing for Sony Pictures for the longest time. It's no Milja Jovovich is involved, I assume. But look, yes, yeah, so welcome to whatever that last Resident Evil was. That was a step in the right direction and grounding the world. Because, you know, the first Resident Evil back in, 2001, it had nothing to do with Resident Evil at all outside of the T-virus and Nemesis and Zombie Dogs. No, they tried to sort of do the mansion from Resident Evil 1, but not quite. And, you know, what was the fucking... Oh, what was her name? What was the character's name in Resident Evil? That Mila Jovovich. Was it like Celine?
Alice.
Celine
is from the vampire and werewolf movie.
Oh, Underworld. Underworld. Yeah, she totally is from Underworld. They're very influenced one another. Those two franchises both progressively got shitter over time. yeah. So look, I'm open to it. I will probably go see it because, like, Resident Evil is at least dumb fun, you know. And they still got Wentworth Miller in the original batch as what's his name? Leon, I think it was Leon. Yeah, he, I think, like, yeah. Not Leon. What's his fucking name? No, it is Leon. Yeah, it is Leon. Big trench coat motherfucker from Village, the one that, like, walks in and shoots your wife in the face. Pretty sure that was Leon. But what about you, Max? Would you watch... what's your stance about the old Resident Evil movies? Because I've been wanting to rewatch them for a while.
Well, I wouldn't go out of my way to rewatch them, but...
But I'm an idiot.
They're not great. I think I've seen all of them, to be honest with you, but, like, they're not great.
No.
Rated type R, Chris Redfield is the correct
answer. Redfield, thank you very much, Chris Redfield. That's right. Thank you, Rated type R, coming through with the correction. Yes, yeah, that's the dude. Yeah.
That's the dude.
Wentworth Miller, Chris Redfield. Pretty good. But, look, it's better than layoffs, I guess. Actually, that's a very good question. Are the Resident Evil movies better than layoffs?
Yes.
Yes, the guy that punched the rock mute in Resident Evil 5, just punch. All right. It's another week. It's another layoff in the games industry. So Sony may be healthier than ever when it comes to its balance sheets, but the pursuit of more profits never truly goes away. Sadly, that's resulted in more job losses at PlayStation's acclaimed Visual Arts Division, a first-party development group which provides motion capture, art animation, and much for its stable of studios. Most notably, it worked closely with Naughty Dog on its various Last of Us projects. Kotaku reports that the job losses included some staff who worked on Bend Studios' recently cancelled project, although a source told the site that the layoffs were more widespread than that, quote. And that was in a quote, of course. But will be updated as more information comes through. So PlayStation's recently gone through a big readjustment period, cancelling the aforementioned Days Gone, follow-up with Bend Studio, as well as the supposed live service of God of War by Bluepoint, and all of this follows the calamitous release of Concord, which failed so badly it released and was shut down within 11 days. There is an update to this story, though, Max. It looks like Sony's support team, PS Studios Malaysia, has also been struck by layoffs, as reported by NMIA Gaming. The site claims approximately 18 staff have been let go, ranging from artists all the way through to project managers. Apparently, staff were told the layoffs were not due to performance, but rather a reduction of the overall workforce. Sony has yet to comment officially. It's a difficult one. They're layoffs. They're not the hundreds of layoffs we've seen in other recent studios, but it's still not good. Like, what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's always rough when people get laid off. And it's just one of those things, like, without releasing any major temples, they've got no big or large income, and they're kind of just spending and spending and spending until they release something, so... it was bound to happen. Sony's had a rough time the last couple of years. Hopefully they will bounce back soon. But for now, we still don't really know what's in the pipeline either. So
we have the ideas.
We have a little bit here and there, but I mean, the last few set of plays have been primarily third party stuff. So hopefully we'll get something big soon.
Yeah, it's I'm no economist. I can't even say it properly. Economist. But like I understand a lot of these layoffs are predominantly in face of the post-COVID boom. Oh, sorry, the during COVID boom or in the like post-COVID recession, and just the general cost of everything being so in fucking insane. And because the late stage capitalism is just so profit must go up and to the right, we're making these like the decisions are being made to lay off all these people, and it's purely fiscal. I have a lot of issues with that in general. I think if you can't run a company, if you can't run a company successfully without layoffs, then you have absolutely fucked up as a company. And I've said this to many places that I've worked that I've been made redundant at. And my argument was, how the why is that the answer? How can you not fucking run your company so well that you must do redundancies? Because spoilers, the jobs you made redundant are still actually fucking needed. So I don't think this is an indicative of PlayStation. Like the yes, they've had a rough run in the last couple of years, and that is also due to poor fucking decisions. Like the these aren't. Oh, this isn't solely cost of living.
No.
In this it was mentioned, the cancelled Blue Point project, the cancelled Days Gone project, and a lot of that, if not all of it, came from shitty fucking leadership. Whether that be in the C-suite with the likes of Jim Ryan, who we can say confidently did not retire, was motherfucking fired because of his subpar handling of the live service initiative. Impacts and decisions like that, and the cost of development is getting bigger and bigger and bigger because the demand and the expectation from the average consumer has gotten bigger and bigger. Many of this t from this is, I don't think, entirely at the fault of the player or the customer. I think it's a lot of it is driven and built by the expectations of the company itself. Like, game studios, they had the choice to not focus on 100, the most graphic, graphically high fidelity game. Like you could still make some good shit, but it's a fight they created.
And the issue is our consoles are getting more expensive, our games are taking longer to come out, our games are costing us more, therefore we want more out of them. It's unfortunately just one of those things. So.
Sorry, my sister just sent me a picture of a herb and asparagus keeper, but it's at Coles, but it kind of just looks like a bong. Hang on, where is it? There it is. So you keep your asparagus and herb well, or you could just have a bong, I suppose. Crazy times.
Beta programs. Sony wants you to be among the first to try out upcoming PlayStation 5 games and features, and is launching a new beta program to manage it all. While participating in betas has often required you to jump through various different hoops, Sony is launching an, quote, easier, more consolidated way for gamers to sign up to participate in future PlayStation betas across a wide range of PlayStation experiences, end quote. Over on the PS blog, Sid Schumann explains, quote, "The beta program at PlayStation will create an easy centralized place for you to register your interest in a range of future PlayStation betas. A single registration for beta program at PlayStation will allow you to express interest in gaining beta access to test participating games for the PS5 console and PC. New PlayStation 5 consoles features, PlayStation app features, and even user experience features on PlayStation.com. The key here is that you only need to sign up once to express interest in all upcoming betas, and if you're selected for a specific test, you'll be able to decide whether you want to participate in it or not. It is worth noting that this initiative doesn't guarantee access to specific betas, as Schumann stresses sometimes there, quote, may be more interest than the company can accommodate, end quote. This is more about expressing your interest in being considered for future betas, and as mentioned, you only need to sign up once. You'll need to be from an eligible location to participate and must meet the legal age requirement for your region. Beyond that, you just need a valid PSN account, quote, in good standing with an up-to-date email address.
So both of us have signed up to this.
Correct.
I've no idea what's going to come out of it. Like, so
Nothing.
I've not engaged in the betas previously because a lot of them are like, "Do you want to try the updated OS.
I was in their firmware beta update for PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if this is kind of a way to get around that. I wonder if we'll see less of pre-order to get beta access, or
But it, to
is
me, it sounds a lot more internal beta stuff. So whether that be any first party release, many of those beta accesses are third parties, whether it be like Call of Duty, etc. It's possible that this becomes that sort of opt-in space. I'm very curious as to like what they cover, what they put in, because I from memory, I think there was selection boxes for like obviously the hardware, software, and I think stars as well was in that list.
Yeah, but they were checkboxes, not a pick one. You could just pick all of them. It
Yeah, I
was like,
picked
just
all of them, yeah.
what do you want to do? The only ones that were you couldn't pick all of them were like the genre of game that
Yeah.
you wanted to play or you were most interested in anyway.
Yeah, so you're not going to get access to everything. You might get select things, but look, it's a cool initiative. I think it's not a bad idea to get things out in the wild in ways like that. It is helpful for you're essentially getting free QA, which I imagine is the entire motivator, just to get people to test your shit without paying money. And because you're doing it through applications, you are going to get the diehardest of people.
It'll just prevent another Concord situation because everyone will get beta access, and then people will realize they'll realize that it's not a good idea.
Yeah, so I oh, excuse me. So I do wonder if that means like Fair Games will be on that. Will Marathon be on within this beta program? Would something like Sonos or Soros, whatever it was, or Intergalactic, very unlikely, a single player story. I think something very gameplay driven like Saros may be a possibility, but like yeah, Marathon, Fair Games, things that do have that online multiplayer requirement, I think will benefit from a program like this. Speaking of single player experiences, The Last of Us Part 3. So Naughty Dog Studio head Neil Druckmann has warned in a new interview that you should not expect The Last of Us 3 to be a surefire bet that actually gets made in the future. Despite the open-ended conclusion of the second game, his claim there's, quote, probably one more chapter to the story, end quote, Druckmann suggests that there aren't any guarantees around a third game. The comment comes from a new interview with Variety discussing HBO's second season of its TV adaptation of The Last of Us. Towards the end of the piece, Druckmann is asked about The Last of Us Part 3, and responds, quote, I was waiting for this question. I guess the only thing I would say is don't bet on there being more of The Last of Us. This could be it, end quote. Druckmann's latest quote somewhat goes against what he said at the ending of the Naughty Dog's documentary of The Last of Us Part 2, which took a deep dive into the development of the sequel. At the time, he explained he had become sorry, he had been unable to find a concept for a third Last of Us game, quote, but recently that's changed, end quote. And that was as of February 2023. The concept he had was, quote, as exciting as The Last of Us 1 and as exciting as The Last of Us 2, but its own thing and yet has this through line for all three. So it does feel like there's probably one more chapter to the story, end quote. Of course, since the documentary aired, Naughty Dog announced PS title Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet. It was assumed The Last of Us Part 3 would be the developer's next project after the second game released in 2020. And during that time span, The Last of Us multiplayer experience was cancelled. And at the time of its scrapping, Naughty Dog said it had, quote, more than one ambitious brand new single player game, end quote. A little bit of an interesting space to be in. You got one clear as day comment saying, hey, yeah, we're working on it. And then.
It's almost like he got told off when he said the first thing, and now he's got to re-throw it
Which
under
is
the.
insane because it wasn't in some throwaway interview. It was in a PlayStation shared and supported documentary about Part 2 that wouldn't have made the edit if they didn't want it to. This feels like some fucking Elder Scrolls 6 shit. where they told it to go, ooh, and then they rapidly realize it's not coming out for fucking years.
Yep.
Of course I want a part three, Max. You?
Yeah, it needs to be finished.
Yeah. It is, and my understanding, or the way I think they'll go about this, is we know that The Last of Us Season 2, or Part 2, I should say, sorry, is being split over multiple seasons as part of the TV show. You get, you know, Part 1 and Part 2. Part 2. Try it again. Fuck. Last of Us Part 2 will be broken into Seasons 2 and 3 of the series. The presumption would be that they'd maybe aim to have Last of Us Part 3 ready by the next season. Gives it another year. When it seems this season two took 2 years? 2 years? Yeah. Yeah, 2 years. Easily. So when it's coming out in April, which is next month, about 2 years from when it originally launched.
First episode was the 15th of January 2023. So
yeah, 2 years. Now, granted, with Intergalactic, The Heretic Prophet, you know, probably coming out within the next year, a majority of that development cycle is pretty much done. I don't believe Naughty Dog work on multiple projects at the same time. They had in the past, but I think from Uncharted 4 onwards, they've been pretty confidently a single game studio. Outside of the last, I think the online and Intergalactic would have been done in conjunction with one another, I assume. But that's my only theory, is that like they're delaying it, or I guess internally moving the goalposts to have it align with a possible season 3. Make sense?
Maybe.
What do you think? What do you think of Neil Druckmann's bullshit?
That he is very well trained in what he can and can't say, and now he's covering all his fucking bases.
Pretty fucking much.
All right, quick bits. We'll touch upon this a little bit more, so I might move this to the last bit. But Forza Horizon 5 will require a Microsoft account to play on PlayStation 5.
Oh, man of people that will... I certainly hope... A lot of people are like, what? I have to make another account to play this fucking game? Ooh, boycott. They won't.
They won't, because everyone plays Minecraft and you need a Microsoft account for that bad boy. Yep. So, Tony Hawk's 3 and 4 is real and is coming on the 11th of
June?
July. 11th of July. With number 4 not being open world anymore. It is a 2-minute format.
Yeah, no, I'm keen. Like, it was one of those things we were talking about, and I was quite excited. But, having it come through, the trailer was great. It showcased a lot of the locations that I remember from 3 and 4. Busted, you know, all played alongside Ace of Spades by Motorhead, which was number 3. The 2-minute run thing, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's unideal, fine. But I guess it's what it was. At least the first three were. Mute in the chat says, yeah, no superheroes, but we got Doom. So they have, with it now being under the bracket of Activision and Microsoft's, Activision, being under Microsoft, which gives them access to ZeniMax and Bethesda. Doom Guy looks to be the unlockable within 3 and 4. So no Spider-Man, no Wolverine, no Darth Maul. But instead we get Doom Guy. Now, 3 and 4 weren't, like, really my... 4, I probably played the least. 3, remember being cool. I know we discussed this last week as we were leading into the announcement. Thug is what you want. You want Underground.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted Underground, but, you know...
But we're going to play the fuck out 3 and 4, aren't we?
Fucking oath I am. And then, obviously, the biggest quick bit... today, Death Stranding launched a release date trailer that goes for a whopping 10 minutes. The game is coming out June 26th.
Why is it not June 26th right now, Max?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my God. So, This is one of those things where I saw the announcement for the trailer when I woke up, and I was like, oh, shit, I'll watch this. But I waited. So I waited till Phoebe came home because she went out and had a girls' night last night. So I booted up, and she was on her phone. It was actually really funny. So she was on her phone next to me. And I was one of those moments where you see her kind of go, like, text, 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 looks up. Text, 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 looks up. And then as Kojima does doing Kojima things, the phone kind of like slowly just goes down as she's like gets deeply engulfed in his fucking chaos. Death Stranding 2 on the beach looks mental. And I cannot wait. It showed us so much, but yeah, also showed us fucking nothing.
I sent the link to the trailer to my mate this morning, and he's like, yeah, I just ordered a PlayStation 5 Pro.
And he's got the right idea. Like, I didn't think about it.
Like, I'm not playing this on my peasant base model.
No, I look, that might be my goal. Originally, I was like, I think I'll get a PS5 Pro for when GTA 6 comes out. I'll have it by then. But I think I will need to get a PS5 Pro by June. Because it looks... like, the trailer is immaculate. So there's a lot of Metal Gear symbol, iconography in this trailer. Mm-hmm. Big Bad looks a whole lot like Solid Snake. There's a mighty Metal Gear looking thing.
I don't think he's the Big Bad.
Oh no, he's probably not. I think Big Bad's Troy Baker, but
in any way, shape, or form,
it's the same. They're kind of giving the same imagery as Mads in the first game.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And like Mads wasn't the Big Bad; he was kind of a big character that played a very important role, but not a bad guy per se. It did leave me asking more questions.
Sam and Fragile just smashing now.
Which makes sense. And it was one of those ones I'm watching, I'm like, oh, of course. Because, like, you know, they can't touch anyone, but they can touch each other. Gross. Because, you know, hot. Yeah. Because, like, they have that thing where they physically can't touch one, like, other people. That's why Fragile's in that suit the whole time. And clearly, like, I think Sam Porter Bridges had like a touch thing, probably autistic, or could like have some in-world fucking, I could forget what it was, but I remember there was a reason he couldn't touch people. I forget what it was. Probably just autism, but they look to show more of the connected world. I do enjoy how the trailer made what was the monotony of Death Stranding seem really intriguing again. Like, it was all these action set pieces, like this giant fucking tar kaiju punching on, and then it cuts to you driving over a bridge, and it looks just as entertaining. You're like, ooh, yeah, you transport those packages.
No, I liked, what was it, fucking Hartman going, let's go fucking Megazord mode.
Yes!
Like, a ship on a fucking head. And he's like, yeah, this is mine now. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and like, I was watching, yeah, Phoebe the entire time had this look of like confusion and just being just completely perplexed by what was happening. And it was very much one of those moments of, that was amazing. I don't know what it was, but it was weird. And it got her attention. So I reinstalled the director's cut of Death Stranding pretty quickly after watching that trailer.
Magellan mode, I think he referred to it as Magellan mode.
Yeah, I was like, I would like to play it again. I think Phoebe would really, really enjoy it because the story is astounding. And I think leading into 2, I will be beneficial to replay it because I think there will be a lot of layers that will need to be refreshed on. For on the beach to be more impactful. Mm. Would you do a Death Stranding 2 replay?
Yeah.
Oh, you can play it on PC, you fuck.
Correct, I can.
Oh, that would look schmick on the PC. Yeah, let me open Steam, see how much it is. I don't have the money this very second because I'm very poor, but
just very poor.
oh, I am, because one of those things where like
You've started a new job.
New
Yeah, you're
job, the
given a month
cycles
pay.
are off, and like part of the monthly pay I used to get was like you would be paid for 2 weeks you've worked and 2 weeks you haven't worked. And
Oh,
so
gross.
yeah, so then I got so therefore when I got you know when I finished up, didn't get paid for the 2 weeks I didn't work. I did get some money as part of my payout, but it was just my annual leave or whatever. Didn't have a lot of it, but it's still kind of it got taxed pretty heavy, and then I also started trying to, you know, put some money back into my savings after post Christmas life. Yeah, so a bit rough at the moment. $55 redos on Steam. Yeah, that's not bad. All right. Look, if for any reason, if you wish to, you know, not we want to replay Death Stranding, you could. There are other games you could play, though, that are
I don't
coming
know
out this week.
what
You know what they are? You can't find it?
they are. Give me a quick look. Hang on, where's my browser?
See, that's this once again. It's years ago, it's years now since the PlayStation blog stopped doing the drop, and it's still impactful this many years later. It's bullshit. It's bullshit, Max.
What's the date today? It's the 10th of March,
Correct.
correct? All right, so we have upcoming next week, we have Beyond the Ice Palace 2 coming March 11th to PlayStation. We have Chernobyl Liquidators coming March 11th to PlayStation. We have Wonderstop March 11th coming to PlayStation. We have 3D Don't Die, Mr. Robot on March 12th coming to PlayStation. We have Fate Reawakened coming March 12th to PlayStation. We have The Phantom coming March 12th coming to PlayStation. We have Dungeons of Hinterberg on March 13th coming to PlayStation. What the fuck is that symbol? Hang on, just like give me 1 second. I'm just trying to work out what the fuck this is. Oh, it's coming to PS4 and PS5. Cool, that makes it so much easier for me. So PS5, funsies, is the PlayStation symbol, and if it comes out on PS4, they've just written 4 next to it. So Dungeons of Hinterberg coming to PS5, PS4, March 13th. On March 14th, we have MLB The Show 25, apparently only on PS5.
Now that's
Also on
pretty
March...
cool. I
Also...
haven't chased up about that yet, but I probably should.
Also on March 14th, and the final game on this list is Police Shootout on PS5.
Oh, sorry, what?
And then the following week, we've got a couple of big games coming out.
Sick. Well, there you go. There are all the games that are coming out this week on your PlayStation. Mute in the chat. Sean says it's too early, Ryan. Wait to play Death Stranding closer to release. Look, that's true, but I know, like, I don't want to like
It'll
out
take
we.
him. It'll take him months to get through it.
Yeah, look, I finished the first game in like 50 hours, and seeing as we've got other games to play alongside, like I can't dedicate myself to it in the way we would if we were reviewing the title. So it'll be something that I'll sprinkle in over the next couple of months to be ready for June, while I save. But excuse me, while I save money for PS5 Pro. All right, well, that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you to everyone for joining us once again. We do always appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to two dudes on the internet talk absolute garbage about video games. But Max, you know what to do.
Alrighty, everybody. This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come check out our socials: Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, or comment below. I endeavor to answer every single question. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com shop, where you can buy shirts and other sorted shit without logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was for the players. Hey, this is pretty good. Like, I'm having looking at, like, what is it? Penguin, Kinguin, CDKs. You know, it's not too bad.
Kingwin.
It's like $25 for Death Stranding.
I've bought stuff through Kingdom before.
Oh, me too. Like, yeah, I don't mind it. But $25, I'll pay that for Death Stranding on PC.